Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. In the past quarter century, Cleveland, Ohio went from being named the poorest big city to a hub for healthcare with a booming economy. But the city still remains deeply economically and racially segregated, not unlike other big cities across this country. Cleveland has a novel idea to bridge the divide. Get everyone reading. From book clubs where you work to off-site gatherings at a local brewery, the initiatives are spreading, they're working, and they're spreading across the globe. This hour on Point, bridging divides through fiction and verse. You can join the conversation on air or online. How does this sound to you? Could it work where you live, where you work? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first this hour from Columbus, Ohio, is Christopher Johnston, a Cleveland-based journalist and author. And you can link to his csmonitor.com story headlined, Cleveland Uses Literature to Empower Youth, Overcome Social Divides. That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Christopher, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So you wrote about this literacy initiative in Cleveland. First, give us an idea of Cleveland itself. It was once named the poorest big city in the country, as I mentioned. How is it doing now?
Actually, I think it's doing pretty well. We still obviously have our concerns about poverty, about employment opportunities. But it's a very vibrant community now, especially the arts and culture, which is really part of the DNA of the city. We've just celebrated the 100th anniversaries of a number of institutions such as the Art Museum and the Cleveland Orchestra and Caribou House. And so it's a very exciting time to be there. There's a lot going on, a lot of people moving back downtown, young people. And so to have these programs is really exciting to see as part of our whole literary community. There are a lot of number of other programs that I couldn't even mention and couldn't even get to. But Scott Armstrong, the editor, and I kind of narrowed it down to those that focused on bridging those social divides.
So talk about that some more. Cleveland has made this incredible effort to reach its citizens, those that are disenfranchised in many cases, and bridge these social divides through literature. Tell me what they're doing.
Well, one of the starting points is the Anisfeld Wolf Award, the book award, which has been given for 82 years. It's the oldest and only award of its kind in the country to recognize books that are about issues of race or diversity. And some of the authors are, as you mentioned, a few of the authors, just some of the best books, and it's an amazing canon, and we have that as a rich resource to draw from. And so the Cleveland Foundation, through the direction of Karen, who's been really – she was an editor at the Plain Dealer, book editor, and she's really driving that out into the community to make sure that it's in libraries. The canon of works is in libraries and is being studied in schools. And so she works very closely with Daniel Gray Kantar and with Allie McLean and also with Ann Cowell Smith. They use other books as well. They pick other books from their own choices, but they also work from that canon. And so it's driving it out into the community now, and they're also adding some fellowships at Case Western Reserve University and John Carroll, and I think they're talking to Kent. So it's just a matter of not just making that a one-time-a-year legacy, but to drive it out there throughout the year, and they're very successful.
So you're getting books out into the community, and Cleveland, not to mention their expansive library system, and I mean, it is impressive, but tell me about some of these organizations that are doing such good with literature, the 12 Literary Arts, the Sisterhood, the Books at Work. What are they doing? Who do they reach, and what's the goal?
Well, Books at Work, Anne can tell you a little bit more about this, but she really starts with corporations and manufacturing concerns and works with them. And the book clubs are anybody from the guy working a drill press to the CEO and to the management. but she also has a very strong social-oriented concern. And so in the article, I focused on the work that they're doing at the VA domiciliary in Cleveland. It just becomes part of the whole program to work with veterans who are suffering from addiction or PTSD or homelessness, whatever they might be struggling
with. And why does it work with that population?
Well, it gives them a social element that they don't always have. A lot of times they're isolated, living in a small apartment somewhere, wherever they might be. And so this gives them a chance to sit down and discuss a book. And it's not really for literary appreciation as much as to bring in their life experience. They've served in one of the branches of the military. They've dealt with drug addiction or homelessness or troubles at home. And so they try to find stories and books that deal with those issues. And so often they'll just in these discussions will bring up something very personal, but it also gives them a chance to talk to their partners in this program and build their confidence, their social confidence. So it's very far-reaching, and I know Anne is doing some studies of this. They haven't published yet, but I know they're working on that. Mm-hmm. And the other two programs were more with youth, Daniel's program, 12 Literary Arts, and Allie McLean's program. Sisterhood, but they both have social components as well. The kids develop this bond with their fellow poets and writers, and I saw it with both groups. The kids, Daniel's working with, are a little bit older, but mm-hmm. Allie is working with younger girls, and it just really brings them out of their shell, as the one girl said that I talked to.
I have a great example of that. Let me bring her in. From Houston, Texas, Mary Barrett is an 18-year-old poet, a dancer, a student educator from Cleveland. She works as an assistant to the executive artistic director for 12 Literary Arts, which is this nonprofit organization we've mentioned that fosters poets, playwrights, and rappers of color. She's in Houston to compete in the Brave New Voices Poetry Competition, which is the largest youth-spoken word festival in the world. Mary, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So tell me how you got involved with 12 Literary Arts there in Cleveland.
I really started in high school after about 8 years of being in the dance department. And my last 3 years, I switched over to creative writing, where I met Daniel Gray Kantar. And he really took me under his wing and helped me develop my voice. And my senior year, I remember I was an intern at 12 for an after-school program called The Fellowship. And since then, I've been working at 12, and now I'm his assistant.
Mm. Tell me how this program and literature, more broadly speaking, helped you find your creative voice.
What I found out about writing was when you start to write, your story tends to come out. And you can't really write pieces that you can really feel until you understand yourself and the stories that you have. So throughout my high school days and stuff, I eventually started to realize things about myself that I hadn't realized before. And a lot of that came pain, and with a lot of that came joy. And that's when I really started to write pieces that I was a lot more connected to, and I started to feel myself connected to the community around me because they could relate to my stories.
I want to play this clip of you performing part of an original poem during the Cleveland Book Week. That was last fall. The poem is called Neo Negroes, and here it is.
Cleveland always got the flu. Even in the summertime blues, clueless caress of mama nature under stress. Cleveland, the only place where you experience four seasons in 24 hours, where brothers stay salty all winter, yet there's still all this ice on these streets, where construction fixes over white smiles and skips over frowns, claiming we couldn't be seen with our hoods over our heads. That's the hood up ahead. Thank the Lord for the freeways protecting Brattonall.
And Brattonall is a wealthy village that borders Cleveland on three of its sides, and then Lake Erie is on the fourth. Mary, what a great poem. You talk about writing and poetry, and when you start to write, the pain and the joy of your life comes out. Why is it important for minority youth to have a program like this?
I think it's very important because, well, at least with my experience in high school, I know that I began to realize that freedom was inside me all along. And I think I'm starting to realize that with the youth that I've worked with and that Daniel has worked with, that when they've been writing, we have a lot of youth that are very angry, and that their voices, they feel, aren't heard as much. So acknowledging that all of their voices are so important can really open up something in their own mind, that liberation can come at any time in their own mind. And I see like a really big growth in a lot of the youth and in myself. And I know I can see it in my writing, how it has evolved, and knowing that we have a really big place in the community.
You've helped organize these after-school meetups, as you call them, for students who are looking to get involved in this project, in this work. Tell us about those meetups, who comes, and what they say when they get there.
So our after-school program is the Fellowship. It's probably one of the best youth programs out there, in my own opinion. We get youth from all over Cleveland. Like, we go into all the schools and we speak with students, and if they are interested, they sign up. And we get at least like 2-3 youth from each school to come in. Some schools, like, they have like 60 people who are interested. And when they come in, a lot of them are very, very intelligent, and are looking for an outlet to tell their stories through. Yeah.
An outlet and an opportunity, Christopher Johnston, right? I mean, this is an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It's really great to watch the kids work and to work on their poems, to read their poems in public. It's just been exceptional opportunities for them.
Mary Barrett, Christopher Johnston, stick with me. We are discussing libraries and literary groups in the Midwest and beyond, and you can join the conversation. What is your city doing to engage the public in terms of reading, in terms of writing? How is your public library system faring these days? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
There's a new way to hear Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all your favorite programs. Just ask your smart device to play NPR. Listen to your local station anytime, like this. Hey, smart device, play NPR.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about writing groups and book clubs that make a big difference to young people, especially across this country. And you can join the conversation this hour. What books do you turn to in order to change the way you look at the world, to help you escape when life feels too overwhelming? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Great guest lineup today. Christopher Johnston, a Cleveland-based journalist and author who wrote a story about literacy initiatives in Cleveland, and 18-year-old Mary Barrett. She works as an assistant at 12 Literary Arts. She's a poet, a dancer, a student educator, and her life has been changed by this program there in Cleveland. From Twitter, one listener says, I lived in Cleveland from the mid-70s to the early 90s. A good part of that downtown is a factory in the flats. This literary project is fantastic. It's amazing to see how alive Cleveland has become. I miss it dearly. Let's get some listeners in here on the phone. Sophie is in Portland, Maine. Hi, Sophie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. I was calling with a question about sort of attracting audiences and using the program to sort of bridge the gaps in diversity. So if you have a book club that's either just at your library branch or just in your workplace or just at your school, how do you sort of break out through break out and sort of desegregate some of these spaces that we have?
Good question, Sophie. Thank you. Christopher, how do you break out if you're in a community with one library? I mean, how do you bring those communities and those people together?
Well, I know Cleveland has done some things to reach out, such as work with our regional transit system, and they've put some of the poetry from these authors in posters that are on the Rapid. And then I know Daniel took some kids out and they went out, just rode on the Rapid and read poems on the Rapid, or at different stops they would get out and read poetry just to kind of share it with the community. So I think there's a lot of ways that you can incorporate those when you identify the work of people of color, for example, that we're using from the Annis Feld Wolf Awards, and just find ways to get them out in the public and read them, and whether it's at your library or on public square or at a Rapid stop or wherever you want to take those out, and just really share them with the community so that they see the value of this work and maybe are more likely to go to the library and look up those books. And
Sophie, thanks so much for the call. Mary Barrett, what would you say to other students who might be interested in joining a program like this, or who are looking for a way to find their voice like you did?
I would just say to really keep writing. It's often like really, really hard to what I'm trying to say is, I know that it's hard to tell a lot of the stories that you're telling, and sometimes it doesn't seem like there are opportunities out there. But as long as you keep writing and you know that your story is valid, and it is, that is something that really helped me a lot. And opportunity will always come along.
Valid and valuable. The stories are valid and valuable. Mary, tell us what you're doing in Houston today. I know you got to run. Tell us what you're doing in Houston.
I'm here for the Brave New Voices Youth Speaks competition, representing Cleveland, Ohio, and I will soon be off to my second quarterfinals.
Wow. For work that you did in this literary program in Cleveland.
Yes.
So how did this program change you, maybe even change the trajectory of your life?
I never really imagined that I would be taking my writing outside of Cleveland or even outside of my own home. And something that's really beautiful about SLAM is that it brings all these people into one space, like all these communities into one space, all with a very common interest and a common love for something. And it's the unity in it that's so beautiful, and to speak with other people who are much like yourself.
Mary Barrett, 18-year-old poet, dancer, student educator, and inspiring person. Mary Barrett, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck to you. Thank you. Joining me now from Cleveland is Daniel Gray Kantar. He's a poet, teacher, youth mentor, rapper, and the executive artistic director for 12 Literary Arts, which is the nonprofit organization that Mary is a part of. Daniel, wonderful to have you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And what a story we just heard from that young Mary Barrett. My goodness.
Yeah, Mary is definitely the present and the future of 12 Literary Arts. I like to say quite often that Mary is 12 because of the way that we endeavor to bring adults and youth together for intergenerational learning in our space. And she is someone who has truly emerged from the time she was about 16 years old to where she is right now.
You are a Cleveland native. You moved out to California, and then you came home. What brought you home, and what inspired this wonderful program?
It's a good question. So my life's trajectory has kind of taken me from originally being a poet. I was a part of the 1994 SLAM team representing Cleveland that won the national competition. And out of that, I became a journalist and also a scholar working at the University of California, Berkeley. And also in education, the education nonprofit world, also in Oakland, Berkeley, and San Francisco. And so ultimately, it was wonderful working with youth on the West Coast. But home always called me. I knew that some of the transformative education through creative writing was missing in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what called me back to this place. And I happened to return at an amazing time where what it was that I learned on the West Coast was very welcome in Cleveland at this point in time. Mm. So it was all about timing.
We've been talking about how literature can help bridge social divides, economic divides, racial divides. Part of that means hearing from people who've been shut out because of those divides. Can you speak a little bit about that and how your organization works to help especially young people overcome those barriers?
So I think that you are really tapping into what the true mission of 12 Literary Arts is. At the end of the day, we're ecstatic if we are able to produce the next Anisfield Wolf Award winner or the next Pulitzer Prize winner. But the most important thing in Cleveland is inspiring young people to come together in a space with folks that are older than them to create intergenerational learning so that we are all understanding ourselves better as individuals, but also developing a sense of analysis in concert around what our community needs and where do we fit within the context of answering that question. And so at the end of the day, if we are able to inspire people to, through literature, interrogate their world and interrogate themselves and why it is they do the things they do and where they fit within the context of changing a community, then we are talking about voice. And so at the end of the day, it's important for us to inspire folks to use their voice so that they can become better citizens and better participants in our democracy. That is what 12 Literary Arts is all about.
That's amazing. So we heard from Mary Barrett and her quite extraordinary story. What growth have you seen from young people like Mary with whom you work? Daniel? We lost him. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I think so. So I think that your question was, what are some of the changes that you can kind of watch people go through?
Yeah.
And I think that the most important thing that you watch folks, you watch the light click when they realize that they have a voice and that that voice matters. This is important because it's not just about your being able to craft a great verse. But it's also about what it is that I have to say in that verse matters. People can hear it, and people can be inspired by my voice, no matter how I use it. And as you know, voice is the most important part of change and being a part of our democratic process.
Let me get Anna in here from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, go ahead, please.
So I've been listening to your program and want to thank you. I am calling from Philadelphia, where I'm a member of multiple book clubs and actually built and founded a website for book clubs inspired by my club's organizational needs called bookclubs.com, book clubs with a Z. And we started off just serving my book club, and now we have thousands of clubs across the country using the site. And one thing I wanted to contribute that's really inspired me about some of the clubs using the site are the municipal or citywide book clubs that have formed with the sole purpose of building community based on literature and reading and discussion of books. One club has recently formed in Boulder, Colorado, whereby the entire city is reading the same book each month. And at multiple events or venues or even in, you know, neighborhood homes, clubs and meetings are being scheduled and, you know, of varying sizes to discuss the same book. That's just one model. I've seen that in a few towns and cities, clubs that are using book clubs. I've seen summer book clubs, a lot of children and young adult book clubs coming online and using our site. And I'm sure we're just a small fraction of the book clubs that are out there. But I wanted to share that kind of citywide model with you as something that other towns may want to replicate.
It's terrific. Anna, thank you very much for the call there from Philadelphia. Christopher, I mean, Anna talks about building community. I mean, this model that Cleveland has started and is innovating, clearly it's catching on. Boulder's doing a form of it, and this is a model for other cities, certainly.
Yes, very much. That's one of the reasons I wanted to write the article. I looked at these programs and saw, especially when they take Daniel or Allie, take their students out to a local club or restaurant and they do public readings, or they're in performance somewhere else at a theater, or now they're competing in the national poetry slams. So it's a great model for any city really to pick up, because these are concerns that we all have for the youth and for someone like a population like the veterans. It can help all these people that we need to reach out to.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation here. From Chautauqua, New York, is Ann Cowell Smith, Executive Director of Books at Work. It's a Cleveland-based nonprofit that holds reading clubs in workplaces run by literature professors. Ann, welcome to On Point. Great to have you from Chautauqua, New York.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you. Good to have you. Tell us a bit about Books at Work and how it all started.
Oh, absolutely. So Books at Work is a program that I founded almost about 10 years ago, although we've started scaling in the last 6 or 7 years. And it's really designed to do a lot of the things that will sound familiar now, having heard from Daniel and Mary and Christopher. We really use literature as a way for people to share their ideas, challenge their assumptions, learn something about other people and themselves, and even as a chance to tell their story and find their own voice. And the way we do that is that we bring professors from local colleges and universities into workplaces, and we have them facilitate discussions around a chosen piece of literature, and we literally bring people in from, as Christopher mentioned earlier, from the shop floor all the way up to the C-suite. Mm.
So you're really bringing aspects of a college education to people where they live. I mean, in Cleveland, for example, college graduation rates are quite low. They're historically low.
Yes, that's true. And that's actually very much the way the program was originally founded. It was designed to say, look, you know, lifelong learning is something we need to be able to do all of our lives. And although there are wonderful programs, and you've already heard about a few that are designed to engage youth and keep kids in school and get them continuing to grow, once adults leave the education system, it can be very difficult to get them back. And, you know, workplaces and communities are very siloed places where the hunger for people of different ages, different genders, different races, different cultures to get together and share their own stories is so palpable that what we've discovered with Books at Work is the social learning that comes from discussing a piece of literature actually has incredible outcomes, not only for the individuals, but also for the organizations and the communities in which they work and live.
Wow, the social learning. You've talked about the powerful inclusion tool that Books at Work is. What are some of the more meaningful stories of bridging those divides that have come out at these meetings that you've held?
Oh, we've had some wonderful ones, but actually in a hospital, a local hospital in Cleveland, we had a program where we had staff literally from doctors and social workers to nurses and surgical scrub nurses, and even the telephone operator. So we literally had everybody there. And one of the books that they read was Isabel Wilkerson's Tour de Force, The Warmth of Other Suns, which happens to also be an Anisfield Wolf Award winner. And that book is about the African-American migration in the 1940s, 1950s, and very much the change in population in towns like Cleveland, like Chicago, like Pittsburgh. And through those stories, the group, which was diverse by age, by gender, by race, started talking about their own migration stories. Mm. And one man, a very brave man, I would say, who was an older white man who had lived in very rural Ohio, said that until he read this book, he had never heard of Jim Crow. Mm. And one of the young women, an African-American woman in the program, basically said to him, you know, I think you've been living under a rock. And he said, I have, and it's time for me to start reading and listening and hearing other people's stories. Mm. So that, you know, that's an example of what a piece of literature can do to introduce you to a whole nother world than the world that you, you know, currently occupy.
You tell another story from a manufacturing facility where people were reading about Japanese internment camps in World War II. Tell us about that exchange.
Yes. So actually, it's a very interesting topic for people to talk about because it's something that manages to avoid most of our history books. But we read a lovely story, Juliet Tsuko's When the Emperor Was Divine. Again, a very mixed hierarchical, mixed function group. And one woman said, you know, this was around the time that the Syrian refugees were starting to flow out of Syria and into Western Europe. And there was some question about whether the American borders would open up and admit them. And she said, you know, I've been very against this idea of bringing a lot of foreigners to our soil. But reading this story about this mother and how she sought to protect her children, I realized that I need to rethink the way I think about people who are in distress, because what if it were my family and what if it were me? And so maybe it's time for me to think a little bit differently about how to think about the world today and what's right. Mm.
Well, we're discussing reading books, and how they change lives with coworkers, those who come from different backgrounds. You can join this conversation. Have you been part of a book club that changed your outlook on the world? What did you learn? Much more to come. We're going to take a break here. Get your calls after the break. So stay with us. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour. And on our latest episode, we're exploring the causes and consequences of hatred, what makes it such a powerful force, and why some people feel its pull more deeply. Take a listen to the TED Radio Hour on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about literary groups that help bridge divides this hour, and you can join the conversation. Can book groups bring us together? Book clubs, what does it mean to share your story, and how does that impact the way we navigate the world? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Here's a clip from a video put out by Books at Work. Daniel Kontofowski is a shipping control coordinator who participated in the program, and here he shares his thoughts.
You talk to people at Books at Work, you get a chance to, you know them and see, you know, what their thoughts are and what kind of person they are. For me, at least, it's easier to interact with them out on the floor. We've discussed all kinds of in-depth and sometimes serious things, and you build a relationship with them. Hmm.
My guest today, Christopher Johnson, a Cleveland-based journalist and author, and Carol Smith, executive director of the Cleveland-based nonprofit Books at Work, and Daniel Gray Kantar, a poet and teacher who runs 12 Literary Arts there in Cleveland. Let's go to the phones. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. In my community, we have free book stations where you can place a book where you've already read and take out another one based on the honor system. It's not exactly a club, but we know that we're all reading the same books, and hopefully that's in minority communities as well. Mm. Thanks.
Jim, thank you. Christopher Johnson, I know we have that in parts of Boston. Tell me about that, what it means for a community to be reading the same work.
Well, it certainly gives people a starting point for conversation if they know they might bump into someone returning a book or whatever it might be. And I think that's important that we share literature, we share the arts, and we're very fortunate in Cleveland. It's a very strong arts community. And I know that leads to a lot of friendships and allows people to learn new things just from meeting new people and sharing the art that they've enjoyed. So that's a very powerful tool.
Daniel Gray Kantar, you started 12 Literary Arts. What do you want people to understand about the often underserved population that you are reaching so incredibly well?
Well, that they have a voice, and that their voice matters, and that the development of that voice and the nurturing of that voice has a capacity to inspire folks that come to our space to transform the communities where they are, to find their own power, to find their own voice to do that, and not necessarily wait for someone else to come into community and make decisions for them, but that they, in fact, have the power and the voice to make those decisions and to inspire change themselves from where they are. I think that's probably the most important thing that folks can learn about 12 Literary Arts.
Let's get Kim in here from Falmouth, Maine. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Only just a quick comment. I'm reading some very interesting books right now that I hadn't read before about goings on in Europe and Germany during the 30s and 40s that have so many correlations to some things politically that are going on that trouble me a great deal, and yet I can't seem to stop reading them. Books like All the Light We Cannot See. Mm-hmm. Currently I'm reading White Rose, Black Forest. Just these beautiful books, but they trouble me so much that I wish there was a book group in my community that I could pull together. If anyone knows of anything going on in the Portland, Maine, greater Portland, Maine area for book groups like this, I would love to hear about it. And Kim, thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. I do appreciate it. Anne, tell us about that. I mean, Kim speaks about reading these books and trying to understand the world in a broader complex. There's something about complex literacy and about using literature to help you navigate the world in more sophisticated ways that's quite beautiful and can be sometimes disturbing, as Kim refers to there, Anne.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely right. And I agree with Kim that All the Light We Cannot See, which is a book that we've used several times in Books at Work, is a wonderful introduction to the human relationships.
It's an amazing book.
Yes, and it lets people talk about experiences that normally are difficult to talk about in the workplace. And I think what makes it interesting is a piece of literature becomes a window. It becomes a traveling device that lets you go someplace else. And so between the literature, which creates a starting point for the conversation, and our professors, who we coach very carefully to help people to have conversations in the safe space of the room that they're discussing the story in, allow people to introduce their perceptions, their perspective, their own experiences, their fears, the things that they didn't know. And I think what happens is that you end up allowing people to build on their own literacy, their own ability to navigate the world by starting to understand other people's life experiences. I was moved by something that Daniel just said, this idea that our voice matters. You know, we are so focused as a society on how much education people have, and we forget that all of us have a treasure trove of life experience that really becomes a form of wisdom. And when you can leave your position at the door, when you can leave your title and your educational credentials at the door and connect at that sort of human experience level, then it's amazing how much more you can learn about each other and how much more you can learn about yourself. And that becomes the foundation for more inclusive workplaces and communities, for more healthy, socially healthy places. And it even becomes the foundation for things like productivity and innovation because, you know, we all know the old adage, two heads are better than one. And when you get a bunch of heads together, it's amazing what we learn.
And it's so interesting to hear Daniel and Christopher talk about some of these programs where the worker on the manufacturer floor is in the same book group as the CEO who runs the plant. Something happens in those moments when you can have these honest and raw conversations and understand each other in a new way, Anne.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, in one facility in New Jersey where we do a lot of programming, the president, who actually happens to be a woman, which is an unusual thing for a manufacturing company, tells us that because of the deepened relationships that she's had through Books at Work with several of the machinists who work on the shop floor, that when she walks the floor, they have a confidence in their relationship and they'll show her things that aren't working and that need to be fixed and that need to be addressed. And they talk about her with this pride as if they were talking about their kid sister. So there's this incredible connection that happens that our typical hierarchies and silos don't normally allow to happen.
Let me get Pat in here from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Jane. I've just been in Cleveland, although my daughter lives there, and she is involved with the Literacy Cooperative, where they're presenting Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. Now, I know you've been talking about adults, but this amazing free gift is a 60-volume set. Children at birth, and no charge, get a book a month so that by the time they're 5 years old, these are carefully selected books, by the time they're 5 years old, they have a library of 60 books. So I just thought perhaps sometime you'd even like to cover that. I think the program is wonderful.
What a great thing. Now, Pat, thank you so much. The Imagination Library in Cleveland. I appreciate that. Thanks so much for the call. Let's get Bethany in here from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Bethany.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
All right. Yeah, I'm calling because in Ann Arbor here, we have a great library system, the Ann Arbor District Libraries. And one of them has what's called the Fifth Avenue Press. And what happens is twice a month on Mondays, we get local writers together. And the first Monday, Alex Corvo and Bethany Neal, they don't just talk about literature and books, but they teach writers. You know, they talk about the art of it, so character art, story plots. And then what the Fifth Avenue Press started doing is they will publish a select number of local authors. I mean, it's not just anyone. You do have to apply. But they publish it, and they give those authors the rights back. So in return, what happens is the community has the ability to go and to check out that book. But then the author has whatever they want to do with it afterwards, whether it's seek an agent, self-publish, keep it for themselves. I mean, it's truly like the best of both worlds. And we learn a little bit in the meantime.
Right? Oh, that's great. That's a great story. Bethany, thank you. One more here from Betsy in Hamilton, Ohio. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. Go ahead.
I have been in a book club myself for the last 2-4 years, and I recently had an opposite reaction, which the stories I'm hearing on the show right now are making me cry with relief that this is happening, that people are thinking. But for all the books that we've read in the last 3 to 4 years about things like the Japanese internment camps and the book All the Light We Cannot See and World War II, even with all that, a lot of these people in this group are inflexible to views that are going on now about some current events. And they kicked me out. So that's been very difficult, but I felt like it was something to stand up for despite whatever consequences happened. Mm. So thank you for the conversation, and thank you for the good news that people are thinking. That makes me hope.
Mm. Betsy, thank you. Daniel Gray Kantar, what about that? Have you had that experience, dissension in these groups?
So I think it's important for us to make a distinction between a safe space and a brave space. And I think a safe space is what a lot of people are familiar with, which is the creation of a space that allows folks to be safe. But brave allows us to really speak truth to power and to really sort of understand that we all have our truths, and that it's important for us to hear and understand those truths, and for you to stand on that truth, no matter where it is, so that you are able to also make yourself safe, understanding that we all have the best of intentions. I think that when we enter a space and we have conversation about the distinction between brave and safe, and that we all have the best intentions of creating a new world and a better world in mind, then we're able to navigate through those through that tension that we have. And I also want to just add really quickly that I think that in a brave space, we have conversation about race. We have conversation about gender inequity. We have conversation about class. But I found that the biggest tension exists amongst the generations. And so when we put multiple generations in a room and hash out all of these ideas, we found that that tension is what's most interesting and what's often most difficult to navigate through.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I tell this to folks a lot so that we have a conversation about how can we do a better job of creating spaces where intergenerational learning happens so that folks across the generations can unpack many of the same dynamics that we're experiencing, but from different lenses due to our social intelligence.
Interesting. Thanks for that, Dan. And you've started a program with Cleveland police officers. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we, you know, as you know, most of our work is in the workplace because we believe that there's a lot of opportunity there, but we really are very committed through the social mission that Christopher shared so nicely, to really helping members of the community. So we work with the veterans, but lately we've started a program, and we're just underway, where we bring members of the Cleveland Police together with residents of the City of Cleveland community to use a story as a way to bridge the fairly well-publicized divides between the police and the community in Cleveland. And we've been very fortunate to pilot the program with we have groups of roughly 10 of each, 10 police officers, 10 community residents, and they'll read a short story together out loud, and we bring in a professor, as we do in the workplace, and they facilitate a conversation. And we've seen an incredible ability for people to use the story as a jumping off point and to begin to talk about the kind of community that they would like to inhabit together. Mm-hmm. And I think it does pull up very much the idea of what Daniel called a brave space, because people feel confident, they feel comfortable to share what it is that they would like together to see happen in the city in partnership with the police and the community. And it's been really exciting. We actually have our next session in 2 weeks, and we'll be even including some of the recruits from the police academy so that we can get some of the police officers when they start very young.
Such a great idea. Such a great idea. Let me get Cheryl in here from Enosburg Falls, Vermont. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Jane. I just wanted to put in a way tooting the horn of the Vermont Humanities Council, which starting 50 years ago went into libraries and did book discussion groups, and with the point of sharing and bringing different people from different groups and classes in. But what I'm hearing on the program is so wonderful. But we've also got young writers workshops and all kinds of things going on. So if somebody wanted to look up what Vermont's been doing for almost 50 years, it would be a nice thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I admire, we do it in the hospitals and in the prisons and in the there's literacy programs that the Vermont Humanities Council has supported for many years.
Mm. Cheryl, thanks so much. Ann Cal Smith, so I'm hearing this is going on in hospitals and prisons and manufacturing plants and, I guess everywhere. Is that what you're doing? Yeah.
Everywhere. Yeah. We've worked in manufacturing companies. We've worked in law firms. We've worked in tech companies. We've been, working in so many different kinds of organizations. We're now in 20 states. We've actually worked overseas now in 7 countries. And I'm proud to say that we'll have our first Books at Work program in China in September. Mm. And it's been really exciting. And the neat thing is we can do this in any language. We've done it bilingual with groups that work together but don't share a common native language. And so they've been able to use Books at Work as a way to bridge that language and cultural divide, where we bring in a professor who's bilingual and who can speak in both languages at the same time. Mm. And so it's been a really exciting thing to see that there's a hunger for learning. And I think your callers have identified that too. This desire for people to get together and share ideas in an open and safe and brave way that is not met in so many of the different things that you do in the world.
Well, what a terrific hour and conversation. Daniel Gray-Cantor, I'll leave you with the final word here. Your group, 12 Literary Arts, has just done extraordinary things. What would you leave us with? What do you want us to know about the work that you're doing and the people that you're serving?
I think the most important thing to know is that we are really endeavoring to create a pipeline. And what I mean by that is really inspiring the current generation of writers who are 14 and inspiring them to become writers, to become community activists, to become future educators and scholars, and just really understanding that our principal belief is that children are not the future. Children are the present. And so it is incumbent upon us to invite them to the table, to inspire their capacity to speak the truth and power in the now, and not just thinking about their capacity to do that in the future.
Well, I was in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, and you could feel great things happening there. Thank you so much to all of you for bringing this to us. Christopher Johnston, Cleveland-based journalist and author who initially piqued our interest in this story because of his work. Christopher, thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Ann Cal Smith, executive director of the Cleveland-based nonprofit Books at Work. So great to have you, and thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
And Daniel Gray-Cantor, poet, teacher, youth mentor, so many things, executive artistic director for 12 Literary Arts. Dan, thank you very much.
I thank you so much.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.